Yes, I'm here with Dennis Stewart, the wonderful herbalist he is. And how are you, Dennis?
Look, I'm very well, but after hearing that, I feel even better.
I've got to put a smile on your dial for Friday.
Oh, that's correct.
That's right. Now, Dennis, last week you introduced the herb Vitex agnus castus.
Well done, well done.
Thank you. Also known as chaste tree.
Yes.
You spoke about its huge benefits in managing premenstrual syndrome, or PMS.
Yes.
Because of the interest in your discussion on the herb, could you review its history, its predominant European use, and your introduction of it into Australian professional herbal medicine?
Well, look, I'm happy to do that. And when I wrote a topic today or looked at a topic today, I had no problem in stating that the previous discussion on it, on this wonderful radio station, initiated quite a lot of interest. Quite a few women contacted me in my rooms and emailed me wanting information, and I thought it's a good time to just again emphasise that, as far as I'm concerned, this is probably the most significant herb that is potentially capable of helping a lot of women's conditions, some of them quite serious. We spoke last week very briefly about a very common woman's condition, which is known as the premenstrual syndrome, controversial term, but many women would relate to it, and it's much more acceptable now, I suggest, even within mainstream medicine, than what it previously was, that syndrome being a disturbance in the woman's sense of well-being, mood swings, irritability, depression,
cramps,
all those things. And I again emphasise that, as far as I am concerned, having had a lot to do with the study and introduction of this herb into this country, there is nothing that I have used in my many years of professional herbal medicine practice that is capable of addressing women's conditions so successfully, so economically, and so safely. Has it all the answers? By no means. Has it some very good answers? Yes. And we'll follow that up today.
Got Kay on the line all the way from Canberra. Hi, Kay. How can we help?
Dennis. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Dennis. I just heard your conversation about a herb to assist women.
Yes.
But I mustn't have heard the beginning of that.
Okay.
And I just didn't know which herb you were speaking about.
Okay.
And which period it is in their life that it helps.
Okay, I'll give you a brief overview, and this
might be
helpful for other listeners who didn't get all the information that I touched on last week. Kay, I was talking about a herb that is botanically known as Vitex, V-I-T-E-X, Agnus,
yes.
A-G-N-U-S, Castus, C-A-S-T-U-S. It is
C-A-S-T-U-S.
T-U-S.
What was the second part? A-G.
Agnus.
Agnus, Vitex,
yes.
Agnus, Castus.
Okay, thank
now
you.
Now, it's commonly or not, well, one of its common names is chaste tree. It is essentially a Mediterranean small tree, very easily cultivated and grown in this country. I know about that because I had a lot to do with it. It found its fame and reputation predominantly after the Second World War in Europe, where particular German plant pharmacists began to explore the chemistry of the herb to seek to justify the traditional reputation that the herb had to address many conditions that women experienced, particularly those associated with what we now refer to as the premenstrual syndrome, which admittedly is a syndrome that is very open-ended, if you like, but most frequently manifesting itself by mood swings, depression, fluid retention, and other conditions that assert themselves in the second phase, or the luteal phase, as we call it, of the period. Now, the German scientists developed the hypothesis that this syndrome, which is a real syndrome, I don't think there's any doubt about that now, even on mainstream medicine, it has been defended by many doctors, both in their practice and also by the writing of many textbooks, but it was discovered or put forward that the herbs had their benefit by rectifying what they considered to be a balance, not an overt balance, but yes. a balance that was evidenced by a change in the woman's experience of wellness and sometimes a personality change. And they put this down to, if you like, an excess estrogen emphasis within the cycle and a deficiency, even if it is a very mild deficiency, of progesterone. Now, this is controversial. It's a hypothesis, but the hypothesis works. And this has led to Vitex being used to address women's reproductive problems where it is considered that an imbalance, mild as it might be, and mm-hmm. defiant to blood testing as it might be, is behind some of the symptoms. Now, I've taken that on board, and I mentioned last week that a very well-known, but now I suspect a long-past, very good British herbalist, Captain Geoffrey Whitehouse, quite a pucker Englishman, but an excellent herbalist. And he wrote well about Vitex and accepted the same hypothesis and saw Vitex as being able to sustain a progesterone effect within the woman and as a result address many conditions where an excess of estrogen was considered to be the problem. And I have demonstrated in many, many years since my introduction of Vitex into Australia. Now, this is very important because when I started learning herbal medicine and practicing herbal medicine, it was distinctly an Anglo-American profession, if you like, with a lot of emphasis on North American herbs. I still revere that tradition and use those herbs. But Mediterranean or European herbs, particularly the more famous ones, were not well known. So I was the first, as far as I'm aware, to begin to lecture on Vitex agnus castus and actually clinically try it at Leichhardt Women's Health Centre very many women many, many years ago. And from there onwards, began to be more and more convinced that in conditions that sustain the interpretation of how it works, from PMS right through to more serious conditions. I'm going to even mention here that a professional, knowledgeable use of Vitex in the right dose, in the hands of a right practitioner, can be a very, very useful tool in fighting that wretched condition of endometriosis. So I could talk all day about it, and my discussions of it over the years have even been heard in the UK. And a dear lady who had just finished studying herbal medicine in the UK was listening to one of my programs on one of the main highways in the UK, and she actually contacted me and suggested or asked if I'd be happy to assess her thesis, which she was doing on Vitex agnus castus for her qualification in herbal medicine. It was a wonderful thesis. I have it at home, and I was very, very pleased to give her a very good assessment. Fascinating herb, not well known, and I encourage, as I have done for years, that because the herb, I call it a herb, but actually it's a small tree, it's easily obtained, very easily propagated, grows well in this country, and there's nothing more beautiful than Vitex in full blossom at the beginning of the warm season in spring, and there's nothing more forlorn than its appearance in winter, as it is in my property in the Hudder, but it comes at that stage with the little berries, which are the medicinal component of it. Get hold of one, you'll be very, very pleased. I got some of mine from Diggers, the group in Melbourne that provide plants all around the world and have a very good journal which I subscribe to. Very easily obtained. Go for it, grow it, and use it. You'll be very impressed.
Dennis, how do we use it?
Okay. Look, I could talk about that all day, but the berries traditionally have been used in Europe as the basis of the herbal tea.
Yes,
and,
okay.
And to use it in managing PMS, it would be used in the period, if you like, approaching the PMS stage halfway through the cycle. I these days, because there's so much more information about and so many more products in the marketplace, I use the preparation as a professional practitioner, as a tincture or a liquid extract. But I suggest, I suggest the herbal tea, like many herbs, is one of the best renditions of the benefits of it.
Thank you, Dennis.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kay.
Next on the line, we've got Brian. Brian, thanks for holding. You've got a question for Dennis?
Yeah, hi.
Hello, Brian.
Yeah, hi, Dennis. Change of topic from your normal subject. I'm not sure if you've talked about it recently. I haven't. Don't listen to every week. Mm-hmm. But basically, I have a friend with a thyroid issue, with an underactive thyroid, who's on medication, prescribed medication, which is Aroxyne, I think, and Levoxyne.
Yes.
But again, just wondering if you can talk about herbal, you know, potential herbal solutions.
My view on this, Brian, is that the modern pharmaceuticals for addressing overactive and underactive are so well trammelled and well understood, and in my opinion, so devoid of serious side effects. That's been my experience with patients that I've treated and even within our family. So I'm reluctant to encourage listeners to try anything other than what is used very successfully and in the mainstream. I know the remedies there are, in my opinion, very good, and they would be obviously prescribed by an endocrinologist or and the GP monitoring it by markers. Brian, you know my enthusiasm for natural medicine, but you also know that I have great regard for mainstream medicine, and with the thyroid, I encourage all listeners to abide by what they're using, because in our own family we've seen the benefits of modern thyroid management.
Okay. Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I just wondered if there was a supplement that would assist the
In the old days, they probably would use herbs, but I'm not convinced that they would do as good a job as what the modern medications do.
Okay. All right.
Okay, thanks for your call, Brian.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay.
Quite a few calls here, Dennis, so we'll get to Jazz from Singleton first. Hi, Jazz. You've got an issue with rosacea.
Yes, I do, and it's only really recent in the past year. It's up and down, and I just wanted to ask Dennis if diet plays a role in that, or internal problems like yeast overgrowth or something or other.
Oh, look, rosacea is a very common condition, Jazz. Are you postmenopausal or premenopausal?
No, I'm only 28.
Oh, okay. Well, you're obviously not postmenopausal. Look, are you on any medication?
No.
Okay. Well, the reason I ask that is that I always encourage my patients and frequently my listeners to get their medication reviewed by their pharmacist. If there is a problem that is stubborn and unyielding, just to make sure that there's nothing in the medication that could be coming. Look, it's very popular to say that a condition like this might be related to what's called gut health. Now, I don't retreat from the hypothesis of gut health having an overall effect on our health, but it is a bit of a bandwagon effect at present, and you have to be cautious that you don't get borne along by seeing that explanation being the answer to all conditions. A healthy gut, obviously, is a beneficial gut. The digestive process, the assimilation process, the elimination process all contribute to overall well-being. But whether or not that translates into an easy explanation of this, I'm not convinced. What I would suggest is that you treat it along lines that I think have more of a hormonal basis, and that's one of the reasons I asked whether you were pre- or post-menopausal. I would suggest that you're... Or, by the way, before I give you the suggestion, is your rosacea serious or is it a mild condition? How would you describe it? Very mild. Now, is it pustular or just redness?
Just redness at the moment.
Okay. Now, have you had any treatment for it up to this point?
I did have one laser therapy, but I found that made it worse, the heat.
Mm. Look, I will give you a couple of hints, and they're only hints that I know. I make no claims that this will guarantee a result because I've treated a lot of rosacea over my career and I have a number of approaches to it depending upon my assessment of the patient and other conditions that might contribute to it. But I would suggest you take on board what I've been talking about this morning and see a trial on the herb Vitex agnus castus because of its, what I call, potential hormonal balancing. And I believe this might be a contributing factor to some expressions of rosacea. Where there is a pustular activity, I tend to treat the condition also with well-known herbs such as calendula and echinacea as oral medication to address the infection, or if you call it an infection, the pustular activity.
Yep.
And topically, I have had great success, and I mean great success, even my receptionist that worked with me in my Warunga rooms in the 1980s was able to manage her mild rosacea by using a cream that I developed called the GA cream.
GA cream.
Now, because you've rang in, I suggest you ring my rooms at New Lambton and we'll send you, free of charge, a jar of the GA cream to try.
Oh,
because
wow.
Topically, it should be able to do something for this mild condition that you have, which might be significant enough to see the condition actually come under control. Certainly my receptionist for many years controlled her mild level of rosacea with the cream, Vitex Agnus Castus. So I have not...
GA cream. What was that first herb that you said, sorry, Dennis?
Vitex, V-E-T-E-X. That will be good enough. Your pharmacist up in Singleton, I'm sorry you haven't got a health food store up there. There was a health food store, and there should be one, but health food stores are under a lot of pressure these days, unfortunately. But your pharmacist should have some preparations of Vitex Agnus Castus. Vitex Agnus Castus. He would know. If you have difficulty, you can always ring my room and I'll put you in contact with local suppliers in your region.
Yeah, okay. So that's a hormone balancing, the Vitex, is it?
Okay. Look, that's how it's colloquially referred to. That's a very controversial definition, but most of the writers refer to it in that way, as a hormone balancer, useful for treating conditions that are suspected, whether blood tests confirm it or not, to be associated with hormone imbalance. If you can't get the product in Singleton, Sally Bowen's clinic in Cessnock would have it.
Okay, good luck. Good luck with that, Jazz. Also, just letting people know that this show is recorded, so it's on our. It will be on our 2NURFM website, so you can go back and listen to the podcast, and you get all the information again. And next, we've got Tanya on the line from New Lambton. Hi, Tanya. How can we help?
Oh, hi. Hi, Dennis. Thanks for taking my call.
It's a pleasure, Tanya.
Just wondering what your thoughts were on taking vitamin K2 for people with cardiovascular disease.
Look...
Whether you think it's a benefit or not.
I'm a bit blunt on this and say that I don't ascribe to it the enthusiastic endorsement that some practitioners do. I think for cardiovascular contributions from natural medicine, where appropriate, it is better, in my opinion, to use some of the well-tried herbs that have a supportive or regulatory effect on cardiovascular functioning and, generally speaking, would not clash with what our good doctors and cardiologists may have prescribed. I think herbs such as hawthorn berry, which I've spoken about, is a supplement that is still underestimated by people as a safe remedy with multiple benefits on the cardiovascular system as far as plaque is concerned, and supporting the heart muscle, particularly in people like myself who have reached that stage where we need every bit of support that we can get. Now, look, I might have sounded a little bit superficial there, but I'm not a user of it and have never felt that I needed to use it, and perhaps that's because I'm too long in the profession after 50 years, but it may have a role to play, probably does, but I've not used it in any way at all in seeking to help people where appropriate with heart and vascular conditions. Hawthorn berry, and it's one of the most readily available herbs. And where you are, you can get it from my rooms. It's so popularly used and so safely used.
Great. All right. Thanks very much for that, Dennis.
Thank you, Tanya.
Thank you very much. Next, we've got John from Singleton. Hi, John. Thanks for holding. You want to talk about St Mary's Thistle?
Yes, thanks. Yeah, thanks for the call. Recently, my wife had a few blood tests,
yes,
and they're coming back with elevated liver function.
Yes.
And he suggested going on to this injection, I think it's once a week, to sort of rectify that. It's a bit expensive, but anyway, that's not the problem.
Mm.
And then I did some reading about Mary's Thistle, and it all seemed to be pretty good. And I asked the doc about it, and he said, oh, no, it's quite the reverse.
I'm not trying
to put you on the spot.
I would have to take issue with your good doctor. I respect, as you know, I respect every opinion that our good doctors have, but there would be no one that I'm aware of that has prescribed more St Mary's Thistle over so many years than myself. And in what we call elevated liver function enzymes, in most cases, the use of St Mary's Thistle, in my experience, based on the literature, and there's a lot of literature, supports the observation that frequently the liver function enzymes retreat to a more acceptable level. Now, keep in mind that the elevation of the liver enzymes can be associated with serious chronic terminal diseases for which the herb may not be appropriate, or where any benefit on liver function may be minimal. Now, I don't know your wife's problem,
but
if it is a functional problem, or if it is just something that is not related to a chronic disease but just has occurred as a result perhaps of... does your wife drink?
Very moderate.
Okay. Is she taking any medication?
Just for blood pressure.
Okay, well, that's fine. It would be unlikely that the blood pressure medication would cause that. As your doctor would have carried out appropriate investigation?
In regard to the liver?
Yes.
Nothing really apart from blood tests showing the elevated levels.
Well, look, if I were a GP, and I'm not, I would, with what I know about what we botanically known as Salebum marianum, for elevated liver enzymes, I would give St Mary's Thistle a go with a degree of confidence. Now, I don't know the full case, and your GP obviously is on the ball, but there is a history associated with St Mary's Thistle which goes back to my introduction to it again as a result of familiarising myself probably 30 years ago with a lot of the European herbs that were not popularly used in English-speaking herbalism. And in the text written by Dr. Rudolf Weiss, a great German doctor, I emphasise, a great German doctor as well as a plant-based prescriber, he presented St Mary's Thistle in the way that you've looked at it as a remarkable possibility for appropriate liver conditions. I took it on board, and this might sound egotistical, but it isn't. It's factual. I gave some of the first lectures on St Mary's Thistle to my students, and a small group of practitioners probably 40 years ago. And now it's a mainstream medicine, popularly used all around the world, and again, particularly and favourably used in Europe. So with all due respect to your GP, and I do respect him, perhaps raise it with him and say that I didn't agree with that, but he may have some information that contradicts my enthusiasm for it.
Yeah, but it I'll certainly check it out further.
Yeah, I think so.
What would be the best form to take the...
Well, these days there's what's called a standardised preparation of St Mary's Thistle, usually in a tableted form. And I would be very surprised if your pharmacist up in that Hunter region didn't have a tableted preparation of St Mary's Thistle on his shelf. Get a standardised one that has a guaranteed level of the major active principle, which is called Soliban.
Yep, okay.
But discuss,
all right, thanks very much,
discuss it with your doctor. He's your prime contact manager. He knows your patient. All I've done is present my enthusiastic questioning of that based on my long-term experience of it.
Yeah, no worries. All right, thanks very much.
Thank you. You're listening to Health Naturally on 2NU RFM. We've got Ruth from Belmont on the line. Thanks for holding, Ruth. How can we help?
Okay. I'd like to know about ginkgo biloba, please, Dennis.
Yes, Ruth, I'm happy to talk to you about that. Ruth's a nice name, isn't it?
My wife's name's
Ruth.
My
wife's name is Ruth, so you get favoured attention today with reference to ginkgo biloba. I know a lot about it. I know this sounds boring because I've said it a couple of times today, but I gave the first lectures on ginkgo at a seminar conducted by Blackmores at Balgala many, many years ago when ginkgo was being looked at but not utilised. And I had done some work in studying it and saw it as having potential to improve what we call now cognitive functioning, that it had a role to play in improving one's ability to remember, particularly in ageing individuals. And on this program over many years, I've presented ginkgo as a useful anti-ageing herb because of the literature and medical preparations around the world, again, particularly in Europe, where it is used to address some of the syndromes that assert themselves as we get older. Mood swings, cognitive dysfunction, short-term memory problems.
Yes, that's it.
It has a role to play there, which I have evidenced and have confidently helped people. It is perhaps being overstated today. It's a pity that some of these great and important herbs are got hold of by aspects of the industry that want to just present them as just a preparation to be purchased very casually without really appreciating the usefulness of the medication and the way in which it will only work if it is, in my opinion, prescribed professionally in a professional preparation that is available from good health food stores and pharmacies in the right dosage for the right condition. But memory problems are very, very significantly helped by the introduction of ginkgo. Again, it is not something if the moment one takes it, one starts to remember too much. It's something that tends to grow on you and the effect is gradual, but it's confidently used for that. But there are other conditions that, again, make it famous. It is also a herb that has benefits effect on the circulatory or the vascular system, but particularly peripheral vascular problems. It is used and justified to be used in addressing into what's called intermittent claudication, which is medical terminology essentially associated with impaired circulation in the legs, on the feet, which inhibits people's ability to walk or to walk very long by the way in which it seemingly establishes what we call a collateral circulation, that is a better circulatory function around the blockage in the blood vessel system. It over a period of time is able to improve the perfusion of these tissues of the legs and the feet, which cause this problem, this painful problem, this inhibiting effect on walking. I demonstrated that very, very successfully in my early use of ginkgo biloba in helping a number of people who had intermittent claudication, who would walk to my rooms in Church Street at that stage, walk up from the railway station, quite a walk, by the way, and who over a period of consultations, over a long period of time, eventually were able to see the benefit of utilising ginkgo because they assured me that whilst they couldn't run up from the station to Church Street, they were able to walk with fewer stops and more comfort. So there are two ways that I see it being potentially useful. It's not useful for everything, and this is where the herb perhaps is overstated in some retail aspects. But where you have a retailer that is familiar with what I have spoken about, the quality of the product, the indications for its use and dosage, well done. But let me just say again, this is what I call a very medically oriented herb, and there are some conditions where, in my opinion, it should not be prescribed.
Oh, okay.
Thanks, Ruth. Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. Dennis, we are pretty much out of time. We've had a good day. Lots of callers.
What a pity.
Lots of callers. And will we continue this topic next week?
Well, we still haven't finished entirely our ramble through Vitex, but I'd like to do that.
Yeah.
So we'll do that again.
Sounds good. Okay. And if anyone wants to know, it's Vitex Agnus Acastus.
You are getting very well with your botanical terminology.
There you go, otherwise known as a chaste tree.
There's a reason for that, but I won't talk about it.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.